And just like that, we're back with how to read MDS assessments. Stick around. Hey out there, welcome back everybody. My name is Rob. I'm going to be your host for this episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. And I guess in a word, we are back. I know it's been a few years since I've put out an episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. I think the last time I recorded an episode was in maybe 2019. So I had recorded at least a year's worth of episodes, and the pandemic hit and I got married, had a child. So I've did a lot of life in between the last episode and this one. So very happy to be back. For those of you that are new to the podcast, I just want to kind of give a brief explanation of kind of what the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is about, who it's for, and what I've learned over the past couple of years about who's actually listening or watching this thing. So the goal of this podcast is for someone who has a family member in a nursing home that may have a specific question, whether that is, what is a care plan? My loved one has been diagnosed with sepsis. What is that? Why does my loved one keep getting UTIs? So questions that someone that has a loved one in a nursing home would have. I wanted to have episodes specifically related to those topics. And so that's what we did. And we've had plenty of episodes about pressure injuries, UTIs, falls, the nursing home industry as a whole. But I guess my intention was never to build an audience. Like, in other words, I just wanted somebody, if they had a question about UTIs, if they Googled that, if this podcast came up, they would listen to the podcast, learn something, and then move on. Like, it was never my intent to, like, you know, grow this thing, which is obviously my intent came to fruition because I didn't grow this thing. But the idea was that I didn't care about, you know, continuity between episodes to episodes, like doing things that would make the content entertaining to anyone other than someone coming in and listening for that specific topic. And over the course of the past few years, I've gotten emails from ombudsmen and lawyers who do listen to the show regularly. There's not that many of them. But I learned that my audience wasn't just one-off family members of nursing home residents. It was actually other types of people kind of tuning in to learn, just like me, because I mean, like, that's one of the we'll get to that in a second. One of the other reasons why I have this podcast is so I can learn some stuff. But I learned that it wasn't just those people. So that's kind of what's going to drive how I want to do the podcast moving forward. I guess we can say that we're kind of in a second season, in other words. So I'm going to have some things that I'm going to do episode to episode, to kind of, make the episodes a little bit, not necessarily funner, but a little bit more levity and, a little bit more, something for everybody. If you are, or you actually are listening week to week to the episodes, I'm also going to have, because of this fact that I'm opening up the podcast to topics beyond just those that would be specifically interesting to somebody that has a loved one in a nursing home with a specific problem, I actually want to start talking to attorneys. And what I mean by that is I'm going to start having episodes that deal directly with nursing home abuse cases, because I think that's interesting to me. It is tangentially probably interesting to the family member of a nursing home resident. But for those that are in the audience that are actually our attorneys that practice in this line of work, I want to start having episodes specifically dealing with that. As of right now, this podcast obviously is plaintiff related. It's from the perspective of the nursing home resident as opposed to the actual facility itself. But I'm not opposed to having attorneys representing the nursing home industry come on the podcast to talk about specific topics as well. But that's kind of the change. Like, it's not just about a specific topic week to week without giving a little bit of something for somebody that listens every week. And also the topics are going to expand out to not just industry specific things, but the, from the legal aspect of bringing these types of claims. So that's what I hope to do over the next 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 episodes. We are going back to a weekly, knock on wood, we're going to go back to a weekly schedule. Before, we had been every other week. Now I'm trying to get us to every week. So that way there's 20 to 30 minutes of content for you every single week as we go forward. The only other thing I would mention is that if you begin listening to this podcast, or you're coming back and listening again, and you have ideas for content, if there's something that you want me to address, if there's a particular guest that you want me to have on to talk about something, please let me know. I'm not really tech savvy. You can hit me up on TikTok or leave a comment if you're watching this on YouTube. You can email me any which way you want to get in contact with me with ideas for content or ideas for guests. Please let me know. I mean, it's not like I'm getting a ton of mail. I'll get it, I promise, and I'll read it, and we'll try to make these things work. But don't hold your breath. I can say this, that I send out probably, my podcast manager sends out, Erica, she sends out probably for every 300 emails soliciting somebody to come on here and talk about something in their area of expertise, I might get one response. So if you do give me an idea for a guest, I can't guarantee you they're going to want to come on this podcast. Cause like I said, I'm screaming from the rooftops, please somebody come in here and talk to me. And most of the time nobody does. So, I guess that's kind of it. I promise I won't meander like that again. I just want to make sure that as far as this episode goes, if you're coming back, you understand what the purpose of this podcast is, what you can expect moving forward in the future. And with that, we're going to go ahead and get into a couple of the, new features of the podcast. The first is going to be, I want to try to do a quiz. So this is for all of you nursing home regulation junkies out there, whether you're an ombudsman, a nurse, an attorney. Every week I want to highlight a particular regulation with a question and of varying difficulty. These aren't going to be softballs. They're not going to all be softballs, and they're not going to all be extremely tedious, but they will revolve exclusively around the federal OBRA regulations of nursing homes. So I want to go ahead and get into that, into the first question of the week, for lack of a better word, the nursing home regulation question of the week. For this week, I'm going to say that the question difficulty is medium hard. So if you get this one right, give yourself 75 points. Under 42 USC 483.65 regarding rehab, the nursing home must provide or obtain the following services if required under the resident's care plan: A, respiratory therapy and occupational therapy; B, physical therapy and speech language pathology; or C, all of the above. The answer is all of the above. Physical therapy, speech language pathology, occupational therapy, respiratory therapy, if required under the resident's care plan, that is, if the resident's been assessed for those needs and it's been care planned, the nursing home must require all of those if necessary. So now also a new feature to the podcast, something that I want to try to do every week. If it's received well, it probably won't be, so we'll see, is a ChatGPT generated joke about a specific nursing home regulation. So that's right, that this is going to be a weekly ChatGPT generated nursing home regulation joke of the week. Just a gentle reminder, this is AI's attempt to blend humor and United States code. So set your expectations accordingly, okay? And I think that we have a jingle. Gene, can you bring up the jingle, Gene?
The ChatGPT generated nursing home regulation joke of the week.
Skynet.
Under 42 USC 483.35c, the facility must ensure that nurse aides are able to demonstrate basic competency and skills and techniques required to care for residents. So if they can dodge a flying slipper, they're overqualified.
Well, there you have it. That is ongoing proof that the singularity is probably far off. Now let's dial into it. So today we're talking about the MDS assessment. So the MDS, meaning minimum data set, is essentially a comprehensive assessment, although it can be less than comprehensive, but it's a comprehensive assessment that the nursing home has to do at regular intervals. And what makes this special is that it has to follow a certain structure that the federal government sets out. So there is typically going to be a series of assessments, a series of categories of assessments based on the different categories. In other words, vision, things like that, that the nursing home must go through step by step. And it's extremely comprehensive. I'm talking head to toe. So every category, the nursing home must answer a specific set of questions. And that's the reason why I want to have this episode, is because if you're out there and your loved one is in a nursing home, you have the right to see the chart. And sometimes when you request a chart and you get the chart, you can't make heads or tails of it. Like, you don't know what's important, what's not important. I mean, a lot of it's important, but you don't know what's what. And so kind of why this episode is important is because if you do have the chart in front of you, you're going to see the MDS assessment. And the reason why you're going to see the MDS assessment is because it's required. So depending on how long your loved one has been in that nursing home, there could be, you know, one or two, there could be dozens. Because like I said, it's required at certain intervals. And that's a topic that we'll get into later. Today, we just want to talk about, once you have the MDS in front of you, what does it mean? Like, what are some of the important things with respect to your loved one? So I want to do that now. I want to just kind of take us through section by section what the section in from a 40,000 foot view means, and what are some of the important kernels that you can draw from that. So when you have the MDS in front of you, you're going to see that it's separated by categories through the alphabet. So there's section A, B, C, all the way to section Z. The first section, which is section A, which is what we're looking at right now, if you're watching this, it's going to be a lot more beneficial for you. But if you're listening to it, I hope that you can still get something from it. We're going to do the best we can such that, you know, if you're listening on the radio, you're going to get something from it. So when you're talking about section A is typically just demographic information. It's information that is used for the nursing home getting paid, essentially. It's telling the government, hey, this is the type of assessment we're doing, whether it's one for the purposes of OBRA, meaning that it's literally a clinical assessment, or if it's basically just to tell the government this is how much we should get paid. So that's kind of what section A is doing. There's not a lot of real information in terms of what's going on with your loved one, with the actual resident. I will say, though, that when you're looking at section A, an important part of it is going to be A310, which is the type of assessment. So typically, in order to get the most information out of the MDS that's relevant to you, you're going to want to look at the MDS assessments that are admission assessments, or annual assessments, or significant change in status assessments. Admission, annual, or significant change in status. These are comprehensive assessments, meaning that they're going to have the most information about your loved one in them. The other ones may not have as much information as you would want to see. So if you have in front of you the different types, what you're looking for is one that's either admission, annual, or significant change in status, because that's going to have the most information. So as we scroll, you're going to see, I'm going to go down to section B. So section B is hearing, speech, and vision. It's going to deal with your loved one's ability to communicate with the nursing home staff and your loved one's ability to actually respond and understand what the nursing home staff is actually saying. So you're going to see that a lot of this information is easy to understand. In other words, like Some documents, like, I mean, first of all, if you had a physician's order, you couldn't even read the writing, much less understand what it means. Here, it's very intuitive. So is your loved one in a persistent vegetative state? Yes or no? You're going to be able to see in this one how the nursing home is diagnosing, or for a better word, assessing how your loved one communicates and how they hear when they're communicated to. So that's kind of the purpose of this section B. So a couple of things that I would point out to you is, in other words, if you're wanting to understand and get the most out of it, is B700. Is your loved one able to express themselves? Because sometimes you think your loved one is able to express themselves, and that's because you've known them your whole life. It's important to understand how the nursing home understands what your loved one is saying or how they're communicating. So B700 is important. So if you see that, you know, it says rarely or never understood, but you understand them every time you go and talk to them, there might be a disconnect, but it might be based on the fact that you know your loved one. So that's also an asterisk footnote. That's why it's important for you to be involved in the care planning process and be involved in your loved one's life there in the nursing home, because nobody knows your loved one as good as you do. So coming down to C, C is about cognitive patterns. So in this part of the assessment, this is actually one of the parts of the assessment where there actually literally has to be somebody in the staff putting hands on your loved one. And this is the cognitive patterns section. So what this is about is the nursing home will come and do what's called a brief interview mental status. It's a test. We call it a BIMS test. Some words are spoken to your loved one. They're asked to say them back. And depending on that interaction, they're given a BIMS score, meaning they're given a score which will tell you what their level of cognitive impairment is. So depending on what that score is, they might view your loved one as being, you know, not cognitively impaired all the way to severely cognitively impaired. I often have people call me and I'll say, does your loved one have any cognitive issues, Alzheimer's, dementia? And they'll say, well, they're saying that my mom has dementia, but I don't think so. This is the section that's going to tell you what the nursing home thinks about any potential cognitive impairment that your loved one has. And that's at C500. There's a BIMS summary score that's going to tell you what the score is. And based on that score, you're going to know if the nursing home thinks that your loved one has cognitive impairments or not. So that's section C, cognitive impairments. So section D deals with mood. So the nursing home has to assess essentially the level of, you would say, possibly depression, possibly anxiety that your loved one has. So some of the questions that get asked might be, have you been feeling down or depressed in the last 7 or 8 days? Have you had trouble concentrating, or have you had feelings of wanting to hurt yourself, for example? These are the questions that get asked in section D for mood. So, you know, to the extent that your loved one can answer these questions, to the extent that you're understanding how the nursing home thinks of your loved one in this capacity, that would be important to know. So this is, you know, this whole section, again, it's easy to understand. Did your loved one feel tired or have a little energy in the past 7 days? It'll say frequency and whether or not that's the case. So you don't have to be a nurse or a doctor to understand this document, but it's important for you to read it so that you kind of keep up with what's going on with your loved one and what you think the nursing home thinks is what's going on with your loved one. So section E kind of piggybacks off of section D, mood. Section E is behavior. So section E basically deals with a lot with what we would call non-compliance. So in other words, is your loved one refusing care? Is your loved one being aggressive or combative when it comes to the nursing home staff? Section E is what's going to, where is where that's going to be documented. That's where this assessment is coming from. The one of the main things I'll point out to you is E800. of the MDS assessment. E800 is the section called rejection of care, presence and frequency, meaning did your loved one reject care, whether that's they didn't want to be turned and repositioned, they didn't want to take a shower, they didn't want to go to activities. Did they reject care, and how often did that happen? So often in cases, what will happen is that I'll have a nursing home accusing my client of rejecting turning and repositioning, for example, and that's why they developed a pressure injury. But I'll go to section E800 and it'll say, no, they didn't exhibit that behavior at all during the look back period. And so there'll be conflict between what the nursing home is saying and what they actually documented. But as for you, for your loved one that's in the nursing home, that's where that's located. And if it says that they're rejecting care, then you want to get involved, because sometimes when the resident rejects care, it's not just because they don't want to. It's not as though they're oriented and they know what's going on. They just don't want it. Often it's some type of underlying pain issue, medical issue, perhaps a dignity issue. So if there is rejection of care and it's marked here in E800, address it with the nursing home staff. Talk to the DON. Hey, if they are rejecting care, what are we doing to make sure that there are alternatives to that care, so that they ultimately at the end of the day, they have their needs taken care of. So E800 is an important part of the MDS section E. Section F deals with typically what your loved one usually does, what their routine is. This part of the assessment is where, what type of music do you like? What time do you like to get up? What kind of snacks do you like? More or less the type of person that you are gets put into this one. And the reason why this one is important, the reason why you should get involved in this, is because typically when a resident is admitted to a nursing home, they're bringing their life with them. If they were a police officer, it might be that, you know, they're in they have cognitive impairments. It might be that in their mind, they're walking the beat. And so it might be, okay, they were a policeman, and that's good for us to know, because that might affect the interventions that we're going to give to your loved one. So really taking part in this section F, the customary routine and activities, would be very important. Section G and section GG deal with the functional status and the functional ability of your loved one to perform what we would call activities of daily living. So how much help does your loved one need to comb his or her hair, to walk to the bathroom, to get out of bed, to take a bath? These type of things where your physical body is needed to do things. So this assessment gets a little bit in the woods, and it's not beyond your ability as a lay person to understand section G or section GG, believe me, but there is a little bit more to it because there's a lot of numbers and you got to look up what the numbers mean. But essentially section G and section GG is going to tell you what the nursing home thinks about how much help, both in literally how much does your loved one participate in the activity, and how much physical, how many people are required to help them. So for example, bed mobility is one, meaning how does your loved one move around in bed? Can they do it themselves? If they can't do it themselves, how much help do they need? Do they just need a rail, like a setup bar, a quarter rail? Or do they need one person? Or do they need two people literally to help move around in bed? And so to the extent that you want to know about that, it's in section G. So anything related to the activities of daily living and how much help your loved one needs with the activity of daily living is in section G and section GG. So section H is typically pretty important because it deals with bladder and bowel if your loved one is incontinent or has a catheter. So all that information related to bowel and bladder is in section H. So oftentimes what happens is somebody will go into the nursing home and they'll be incontinent, and maybe if they don't have a catheter, they get put in briefs and they stay in briefs forever, which is typically not a good thing unless there's no other options. And people will call me and be like, you know, my loved one is incontinent. She's always in a diaper, blah, blah, blah. The nursing home typically, if the standard of care requires it, should put your loved one through what's called a toileting program, whether that is a urinary toileting program or a bowel toileting program, meaning should it be a situation where there's a routine monitoring, like we're going to come and check for her diaper every 2 hours? Or maybe it could be queuing, like, hey, listen, now is the time that we do this, and you develop a program. There are different ways that you can try to eliminate the incontinence of a resident, whether it's urinary or bowel. And if your loved one is on that type of program, it's going to be in section H, the bladder and bowel. Typically, the regulations are going to want the nursing home to at least have a trial of a toileting program. And again, that's going to be in section H. So if you have concerns about UTIs, recurrent UTIs, if you have concerns about your loved one sitting in an adult brief, go to section H and see whether or not a trial has been done in the past. And if it hasn't, approach the DON about it. Okay, so section I is the next section. Section I just deals with active diagnosis, meaning there's like literally a list of different diagnoses, from anemia on down to cerebral palsy to what else we got, diabetes, where everything that your loved one has gets a check mark, and it gets put into their documents, basically their care plan. So again, oftentimes, you know, even though we do the best we can with our loved ones in terms of being a caregiver, and then we make the decision to put them in a nursing home, we don't know everything. So it could be where perhaps the nursing home has said that your grandmother has, hypertension, and you never knew that. And so this could be a conversation starter with the DON. Hey, why is hypertension marked on active diagnosis in section I? I've never known her to have hypertension. And they might say, oh, that's a mistake. Or they might say, well, I mean, you need to learn because she's on the medication, et cetera. So this is where you can, I guess, kind of cross-check what the nursing home is doing, because you might think that your loved one has one of these active diagnoses and they don't put it, and vice versa. But that's where the diagnosis information for your loved one gets put in section I. Section J is about health conditions, meaning this gets into pain management, it gets into pain assessment, it gets into essentially some specific issues of health that your loved one might have. So, for example, shortness of breath, but mostly it has to do with pain management. So if you have any questions about pain management, section J is going to be where it is. Another issue that I have is oftentimes people will call me and they won't realize that their loved one is on hospice care or palliative care, which in Georgia, hospice care and palliative care typically means that there's a terminal illness that is the prognosis is 6 months or less. I know that that's not a bright line rule, but typically that's what that means. And the people and the loved ones will call me and they'll say, no, there's nothing wrong with my loved one and he's going to live forever. They don't realize that they've been diagnosed as having a terminal illness and they have less than 6 months to live. Where you're going to find that information on the MDS assessment is section J1400. So that's J1400. And the nursing home has to answer a question, yes or no. Does the resident have a condition or chronic disease that may result in a life expectancy of less than 6 months? So that is a yes or no question that gets responded to or gets answered on the MDS assessment at section J1400. It's called prognosis. So again, this is one of the key portions. If my loved one is in a nursing home, is do they think that they have that my loved one has a condition in which they're going to likely pass away in 6 months or less? That would be something that I would want to know. Section K deals with swallowing and nutrition. So typically this is where weight goes. The nursing home has to typically, the standard of care will be to weigh your loved one at a regular interval. And that's where this information goes. Also, if your loved one either gains weight too quickly or loses weight too quickly, and there are percentages of body weight lost or gained that would red flag this, but that's also where this goes. So if during this assessment process, your loved one has lost a certain amount of weight in a certain amount of time, then this, and if that gets checked, then there are going to be some things that get triggered down the line to put interventions in place. But this is all about, you know, can your loved one swallow food? Does your loved one need a tube? That kind of stuff. That goes into section K. Section M is relatively important, at least in my line of work, because it's unfortunate, but many of my clients have pressure injuries. But section M deals with skin conditions. And it doesn't have to necessarily be pressure injuries, but a majority of section M deals with, did your loved one enter the nursing home with a pressure injury? Do they currently have one? How many? What stage is it? All that information gets put into section M. Again, one of the main things that I would look at, because sometimes the nursing homes, if an MDS is inaccurate, doesn't necessarily mean it's nefarious. These are human people doing this work. This document is 50 pages. They're looking at hundreds of pages of chart when they're doing this. So there's going to be inaccuracies, but what I would look for is there are sections in section M that will say, was this pressure injury present at admission? So that's what I would look for too. When you're looking at section M, was it present on admission? The next thing I would look at on section M is, what are they doing about it? So if your loved one is at risk for pressure injury, then section M is going to be where it'll tell you, here are all the interventions or intervention categories that are in place that the nursing home is using to try to prevent future pressure injuries or treat the one that he or she has now. So you'll see that in section M1200, you have skin and ulcer treatment. So like, there's pressure reducing device for chair, they may or may not click that. Pressure reducing device for bed, they may or not click that. Turning repositioning program, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a list of interventions that if they're actually being done, they would be checked off here. So if your loved one has a pressure injury and you're looking at the MDS for the first time, zero in on section M and then zero in on section M1200. And that's going to tell you what they're doing. Section N deals with medications, meaning that, is your loved one on any type of psychotropic medication? Does your loved one need insulin? These type of things. Section N is a Nancy, is where medications go. Section O is going to be where special treatments and procedures go. So for example, if your loved one is getting chemotherapy, if your loved one is getting dialysis, these special, typically outpatient type of things, if they're receiving any of these, this is where this gets assessed and marked. Where therapy goes, section O. Sorry if you're watching this, I'm breezing through it. Section O is where, if your loved one needs speech language pathology, occupational therapy, physical therapy, section O is where that goes. So a lot of times I get calls, there are certain rules about how long Medicare will pay for certain therapy, what you're entitled to under Medicare, these type of things. Go to section O and it will tell you how much therapy was deemed as necessary and whether or not your loved one is through with therapy. That'll answer these questions. Section P deals with restraints. So typically restraints, whether they're physical restraints, chemical restraints, they're not allowed. They're only going to be allowed under really specific reasons. So if you do see that on section P, there's a list of restraints, bed rail, trunk restraint, limb restraint, etc. So if you see one of these clicked, then that should be a massive red flag for you. Something's going on. I'm not saying that it's wrong. because typically a physician is going to have to prescribe that restraint. But if one of these is checked off in section P, one of these restraints, you need to get to the bottom of that really, really quickly. Because, you know, it should be a very rare occurrence that there is a restraint. So section Q typically has to do with the level of involvement that your loved one has in this comprehensive assessment process. So typically you're going to find that if your loved one has severe dementia, they're probably not participating. And so this section is going to be marked as no. There's questions in here about, you know, do you expect to go back back home after nursing home, that kind of after your stay in the nursing home, etc., and that kind of thing. Typically, how the resident is viewing their stay at the nursing home and what their future plans are, if they can actually have that conversation. There's several letters are skipped. Then we get to section V, which for us has no, there's not going to be really value in this. All section V does is tell you that let me back up. So section V is telling you about whether or not there's a care area assessment. And I don't want to get into that in this episode because we're just talking about, you know, the down and dirty, quick and nitty gritty of reading an MDS assessment if you're a layperson. But if a resident gets admitted, so for example, in section M for skin condition, if they have a pressure injury and the nursing home checks that off, then what's going to happen is that a care area assessment is going to be checked. And what that means is that the MDS drives the care planning process. The MDS, the information in that MDS, after the assessment, you have the MDS, that's supposed to essentially be the data that drives what the interventions are for your loved one, the interventions being on the care plan. So the federal government has provided a series of questions and a series of further information that's needed if one of those areas, care areas, is flagged. So again, if it's a pressure injury, then there's going to be a care area assessment that has to be done, which again influences how the care plan is done. But for our purposes today, we don't really need to get into that. Section X is not for our purposes. And then finally, getting down to section Z, Z400. So to me, this is where the rubber meets the road. Everybody that conducts a portion of the MDS assessment, you might see one name, you might see several names. I hope that you see several names because that means that different departments are participating in the MDS assessment. So you might have dietary doing the dietary portion, you might have physical therapy doing the other portion, et cetera, et cetera. But you're going to see names. You're going to see first names and last names. And to me, that's important. You want to know who's taking care of your loved one. So jot those names down. Be like, hey, can I talk to, you know, Jane Smith? She's the one that did the skin condition assessment. And it's possible that this person only looked at the chart. I hope not. But it is possible that they looked at your loved one. You can be like, hey, why did you say this, this, or this? And if you can't do that, then you bring that up with a DON. Hey, Jane Smith on the MDS assessment said X, Y, or Z. The MDS assessment actually has to be, under the regs, coordinated by a registered nurse. Now, in my experience, that can mean a lot of things, where everything from the nurse does everything or nurses do everything to the nurse does nothing and only signs off on the MDS assessment, and the MDS assessment is done itself by LPNs. But the individual signing their name to that at Z500 is the nurse that is saying this is accurate. Everything in this 50 pages of assessment is accurate under penalty of perjury, which is really interesting to me. But at any rate, at least with section Z of the MDS assessment, you're going to get names of the individuals who conducted the MDS assessment and the various sections. It's going to tell you Jane Smith did section M, N, and O. John Smith did sections A, B, and C, et cetera, et cetera. And so at least you'll know who took part in the assessment of your loved one. So that was a lot. If I hope that wasn't too in-depth. I wanted that to be kind of an overview. Again, it's not medical advice, not legal advice, But if you have an MDS in your hands, these are the things that I would be looking at. Of course, the MDS has a lot more information, but like I said, this is just a 40,000 foot view of, to me, typically what's going to be important from resident to resident. It's not intended for you to be a medical provider. It's not, this episode is not intended for you to insert, you know, your medical judgment over the medical judgment of the nurses and the physician. It's simply for you to understand that this is how the nursing home is viewing your loved one. This is how the nursing home sees your loved one's clinical condition. And this gives you an opportunity to say, I never knew that my loved one had this, this, or this, or I never knew that my loved one had this diagnosis. And you can start that conversation. But typically, the conversations we have, whether it's during care plan meetings or just during visits that we have with nursing home staff, I'm not saying that we're at a disadvantage, but it's the more that you know, and the more that you know that they know, I think is a powerful thing. So if you have that MDS assessment and you read through it, it's only going to be better for you to start these conversations, to have these conversations, and having these conversations might lead to better interventions. It might lead to better outcomes for your loved one. So that's kind of the genesis of the catalyst of why I wanted to talk about the MDS assessment. The MDS assessment is a super powerful thing. But at any rate, I'll get off the MDS high horse. So I hope that you enjoyed the content of this episode. I'm really glad that we're back. I can say that as of the day that I recorded this, we have maybe about 10 to 15 episodes in the can with different guests. And I can say that I've really enjoyed getting back in the saddle. I've learned so much. I continue to learn so much. I mean, I've been doing this for a minute, but I learn something every single episode of this podcast. And that's one of the main reasons why I do it. Not just to inform the public, not just to help ombudsman and attorneys, but to help myself. So there's a little bit of a selfish motive. It's not just completely altruistic. But I hope that if you made it through this far, that you stick around, you listen as much as you can, you learn as much as you can. And what's the other thing I was going to say? Where you can get this podcast. I need to write a script for this because I forgot to. But you should be able to get this podcast anywhere that podcasts are available. So if you're watching this on YouTube, you can go on Spotify and listen. If you're listening to this on, say, Apple Podcasts, you can go on Spotify or on YouTube and vice versa. So anywhere you get your podcasts, you should be able to get this. Wherever you do get your podcast, if you want to review the podcast favorably, hopefully, that would be good too. Again, any ideas for content, any ideas for guests, please message me in some way. And with that, folks, hopefully, and I look forward to seeing you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal or medical advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes, for now, are available every other Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.